All right, 8 minutes after the hour. Good morning. Jason Mitchell is a teaching pastor at LCBC, and that stands for Lives Changed by Christ. Pretty direct marketing there. I like that. And he likes drinking coffee and appreciates University of Alabama football, and he likes things rock and roll related, just like myself. And he's got two first names, just like me. So I'm already liking this guy. Jason, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Bill, for having me.
Yeah.
Great to be with you.
Let's talk a little bit about rock and roll just to get things started on this Wednesday morning. What do you like?
Man, I like it all. I love rockabilly all the way up to sort of modern day, modern day sounds.
And, okay.
I don't know, man. I grew up with a lot of it, and I've carried it through all my life here. So if it's got guitars and they're loud and it's got some, it's got some heavy drums, I'm good with it.
Oh, I like you already. All right. Congratulations on your new book. No Easy Jesus, How the Toughest Choices Lead to the Greatest Life. And I think, Jason, one of your points of the book is a lot of us have sort of settled for salvation someday, but we're not realizing that we can really experience a fuller life right now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because as a pastor, I get to interact with, so many people who have divulged to me a couple of different frustrations or discouragements, I should say, or disappointments that they've ended up having with faith. And it has nothing to do with sort of the vision that Jesus lays out for us, what it means to follow him. It just has everything to do with sort of our experience with it. And I think, Bill, a lot of times some of the common threads that I've tended to hear from people is they end up growing discouraged. And so they start out and they're passionate and it's sort of everything is new and they're making connections from their everyday life into, what Jesus is calling them into. But then at some point they grow discouraged because they look around and they see others around them who are taking bold sort of risk-taking, steps of faith. And they're sitting there going, man, I don't think I could ever do that. I don't know if I really want to do that. And so you kind of settle into this idea that just must be for them, like that deep abiding, abundant life, that must be for someone else. That's for the pastors. That's for the spiritually elite. That's for the people who don't have baggage like I have. And we kind of settle for discouragement. And some of us, I think, just get frustrated because, we start out and we begin to walk with God, but then we realize, a year's gone by or 2 years have gone by or a decade's gone by, and we're still struggling with some of the same things that we were struggling with a long time ago. And we get beat down by that frustration, and we sit there, and sometimes we just kind of believe the idea, well, that's just the way it's going to be. That's just the way our family talks to each other. Even though we know it hurts each other, that's just the way we talk to each other. That's just the way we handle money. Even though it's putting us more and more in debt and is hurting our financials, that's just the way we spend. I mean, you know what I mean? So we just kind of settle into frustration. But I actually think, Bill, that the most sort of the dominant thread that I tend to see is just boredom, where I don't know, Jesus just kind of gets relegated to background music in our life. We just kind of keep going. We go through the motions of life. We go to work. We do our 9-to-5. We do our thing, and Jesus is there. We go to church. We do all that stuff, but it's kind of a checklist. And the power that God, I think, has for us to transform our everyday life kind of gets put up on a shelf along with the scrapbook and supplies and, whatever else we've kind of put up there. And it was once a hobby. And, that's just not the best life. That's just not the kind of life that Jesus promised in John 10:10 when he says, I want to give you life and life to the full. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about something much, much different. So that's in the book what I'm trying to help people tap into.
Jason, that's a great observation you've made, and I think everything you've said is right on. And I also, I'm wondering, have we lost some of our self-discipline when it comes to growing in our faith and digging deeper into the Word? It's just like, when you first fall in love and the chemicals in your brain go nuts and you just think about the person all the time. It's a little bit like when you become a Christian and you're just so excited that God has set you free and that everything is so thrilling. And then all of a sudden, after several years, Maybe the chemicals in your brain aren't firing the way they once were, and you're feeling a little bit disillusioned with your faith. And you see, like you say, you see other people taking these big risks, and it's like, that's not for me. When in fact, it might be.
I think you're hitting the nail on the head. And I think that, you know, essentially, I heard a quote the other day that said, you don't fall into love, you commit to it. I love that idea.
I do too.
Because now that doesn't mean the feelings aren't there and all that. I mean, obviously, that might be one of the more unromantic things we can say, but it's true.
Right.
I mean, if you've experienced any depth of relationship, then you know that, yeah, those feelings are there and that passion's there and all that. But that's not what it's built on. It's built on commitment.
Covenant.
It's built on your willingness to say, I'm committed to you day in and day out, irregardless of anything else.
Right. Right.
And that's the same. That's the same with God. Like, you know, I mean, with relationship with God, this is about something we give ourselves to because we believe in the end it is best and it is right and it is good. And we're going to wake up again tomorrow. It's just like Paul says when he says this in Colossians chapter 2, verses 6 and 7, he says that just as you first accepted Christ, Jesus as your Lord, so continue to follow him. So that accepting Christ Jesus as our Lord, that's that, what you were mentioning a minute ago, that's that passion, that's that feeling, that's that transformative, man, God, you know, Jesus, you have that moment where you go, I'm at the throes of your grace, and here I am. And Paul says, so then continue to follow him, though. That's the commitment. That's to wake up again tomorrow and choose Jesus all over again.
Mm-hmm.
That's how transformation begins to take place in our life.
Yeah. Jason, I want to talk to you till noon.
We'd have fun, would we?
Oh, yeah, we would. I just want to figure out your take on why Christians have grown bored and frustrated with believing in Jesus. And I want to take a break because I have to. But when I come back, that's where I want to pick up. So be back in just a minute. It is 15 minutes after the hour. We'll take a very short break and be back with Jason Mitchell. Welcome back. It's 17 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Jason Mitchell, who wrote a book called No Easy Jesus. And we're talking about moving past just simple belief into experiencing transformation and really living the fullest life that Christ has for us. Jason, we were just before break talking about how easily Christians can appear to have grown bored or frustrated. And sometimes I just wonder about this boredom thing and what are we doing that's creating so much boredom?
Well, you know, one of the passages I love is in Philippians 2 when Paul says to work out the results of your salvation. And I love that passage because it actually has some tension in it because you see these two ideas of work and salvation. And, you know, and that passage has been, I think, misunderstood over time, and it's not work for your salvation, because we all know, I mean, when you look at the scriptures, it's clear in the New Testament that you're saved by grace alone, right? It's Ephesians. It's by grace that you're saved and not by works. And yet Paul is saying, and yet there's this element, right? Salvation is grace, pure, unadulterated, unfiltered grace. And yet there's this idea where we need to work out the results of that, to see the results of that in our life. You can't be bored with a relationship with God when you wake up each day going, God, I want to see the effects of that salvation live itself out in my life. So it's not today I'm going to do something to earn more of it. It's today I'm going to live in a way in response to it, that I'm already been brought into your family, God, through what Jesus Christ has done for me. And so if salvation is pure, unadulterated grace, I think what Paul's talking about when he's talking about work there is the word grit. And I love that word grit because it's a character trait.
Yeah.
It's tenacity. It's resilience. It's, you know, it's that sort of stick-to-itiveness, that idea that you get up again tomorrow and you go after that thing that you want the most in life. And Paul's saying, man, when grit and grace, when those two things begin to operate in our life, that's where transformation happens. Transformation happens at that intersection of our grit and God's grace. That's where our hearts are changed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all on God's initiative, all on God's, you know what I mean? It's through his power. But so we're not talking about salvation here. We're talking about transformation. We're talking about the way that God begins to move us into more and more of the likeness of Jesus Christ. So I think when you commit to that, when you get up and you say, man, I want that. I want to live a life of forgiveness. I want to live a life of generosity. I want to step into the ways of compassion. I want to begin to love like Jesus loved. Every single one of those takes enormous reserves of grit. Mm. That doesn't happen by accident. You will never accidentally forgive someone. I promise you.
Yeah.
You will never just stumble into generosity. You have to choose these things.
Yeah, you don't window shop for forgiveness, do you? You pretty much have to be very intentional about it.
That's right.
Well, Jason, go ahead.
I was going to say, so that's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in just helping people understand these choices that Jesus is asking us to make, which he describes as narrow doors. But if we're willing to, when you think about a narrow door, you don't just slide through that. You got to kind of bend down a little. You got to contort your body a little bit to get through a narrow door, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A little bit of, you use that word intention. I love that word, will and intention. And if we're willing to do that on the other side of those doors, man, that's where life is. Life mm-hmm. is for us.
I love a passage in Philippians where Paul says, I want to know Christ, yes, to know the power of his resurrection. And I wonder, how often are we as Christians today witnessing the power of his resurrection? Because if that doesn't absolutely light up every switch in your brain, I don't know what would. But when I see someone who's crossed from death to life, I've actually witnessed the power of his resurrection. And I have to tell you that there's nothing boring about that at all. I never, ever, ever get tired of that. My brain fires on all cylinders when I see that and experience that.
Absolutely. And he also uses that idea when he talks about in Philippians 2. He says that God who is working in you is giving you, this is in verse 13 of Philippians 2, he says he's giving you the desire and the power to do what pleases him. So mm-hmm. there's your word power again, right? He's giving you the desire and the power to do what pleases him. And I love that because either one of those, desire or power, one without the other would kind of be pointless, because you could have all the desire in the world to live a life that pleases God, but no power to do it. And that would be like having, the best car in the world, but you don't have the keys to drive it. So it's kind of wasted, right? You got all the desire, you just don't have any power.
Right.
Or if you had all the power in the world, but you don't have any desire, you'd be frustrated because you're not going anywhere, right? Because you don't even have the motivation to do it. But that's not what the scriptures say. The scriptures say that God has given you the desire and the power to live a life that pleases him. So in your marriage right now, for any of your listeners, or in a struggle that you have right now, or maybe it's you're steep, it doesn't matter what you're stuck in. God, that is a promise. You do not have to stay stuck. That God is saying, I have something better for you. I'm calling you out, and yes, it will be tough. No doubt about it. It's a narrow door. Mm. And no, it won't always be easy, but it will be best. And if you're willing to follow me, and if you're willing to live at that intersection of grit and grace, God says, I'll give you all the desire and power you need. That's a promise.
I think you're a born encourager, Jason.
Well, thank you.
Let me ask you this. Now, you also wrote that Jesus can become like background music to a heavily scheduled life. And what is that? What's the answer to trying to bring our faith and our walk back to the forefront of our lives?
Well, I think one of the things, Bill, this is going to be really simple. Sometimes we overcomplicate things. So I'm going to give you about the simplest answer to this one.
All right.
And sometimes the simplest answers are the ones where we also, we kind of reject the most.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is, though. People of faith throughout the centuries, when you look at the scriptures, when you look at Jesus, when you look at just people who've come after us and written over the last 2,000 years what they do, there is a practice embedded into their daily lives of sitting down, engaging the scriptures, spending time in quiet prayer, and then getting on with their day and noticing the fingerprints of God all throughout their day, and yet using that time at the beginning of the day. So this is going to probably sound old-fashioned to some people, but I'm a huge believer in this. I think how we start our days sets the trajectory for the rest of the day. And that doesn't mean I got kids myself. I've got a busy life. I get all that. That doesn't mean you got to sit down for 3 hours every morning. But I think when I made a decision years ago, I realized that, Bill, that every morning I was waking up, my phone alarm was going off, and all of a sudden I was, before my feet hit the ground, I was already checking my email.
Mm-hmm.
And I was already, before I even got to the closet, I was already checking social media.
Mm.
And I went years doing this, and my soul was dry. I had nothing in the tank. And so I started to really reevaluate some of the patterns in my life. And one of the patterns, one of the commitments I made at that point was, I'm not going to engage technology until I have pointed my heart in the divine direction. And so for me, that just meant I'm not going to be on the phone. I'm not going to be do any of that until I have at least sat down and spent. Now, some mornings, that's 5 minutes. Some mornings, that's an hour. So it's not about time. It's about the posture of our heart. It's about sitting down and starting our day that way. And so mm-hmm. I just find a chair. I grab the scriptures. You know, I just read, and I point my heart in a divine direction. And to me, what that does is that begins to open my eyes to God's, like I said a minute ago, God's fingerprints throughout the rest of the day, because my day started there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't encourage your listeners enough to say, we've got to make some space for God to talk. I believe God is always speaking. The question, sometimes we're like, I just need God to show up. Nope, God's shown up. He's already shown up. The question is always, will we show up?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, that's my take on that, that we've got to create some space.
Jason, I just took a massive two-person survey here in the studio, and Rebecca, our producer, and myself, we like you very much.
Well, thanks.
You've been very encouraging, great. And I can't think of a better way to start the morning with the encouragement you gave us, me, Rebecca, our listeners. It's just been the perfect way to start the day. And I do want to have you back, because I've got another half a dozen questions for you about your book.
The
book is once again called No Easy Jesus by Jason Mitchell, How the Toughest Choices Lead to the Greatest Life. Jason, thanks so much and have a great day.
Thanks, Bill. You guys too. Thanks for having me.
Yep. It's 27 minutes after the hour. After a short break, we're going to hear the news, and then we're going to talk to Dr. Kent Kaiser. He'll be in studio, and we'll be talking about everything that's going on in Washington, D.C. Be back in a minute.
Every child deserves nutritious food. Every child deserves clean water. Yet in countries like Haiti and Guatemala, tens of thousands of kids wake up every day with neither. Many of these children cannot attend school because they have to spend their days carrying water many, many miles. They are being robbed of their childhood, their health, and sometimes even their lives. These children are praying for an end to their suffering. They long for a better life. A life where a drink of water doesn't mean sickness or maybe even death. Today, you can give the gift of life and hope to a suffering child through Food for the Poor. A one-time gift of just $150 will provide food for a year and water for life for three suffering children.
How many kids can you save right now? Call 855-892-HOPE, 855-892-4673, or give online at myfaithradio.com. Just click the banner that says Give Life, 855-892-HOPE.